Well, thank you. It's a huge honor to be here today, and in my anxiety-fueled attempts to choose some poems to read to you, I tried to maintain my inspiration thinking about the tradition of this ceremony. It's being centuries old, but that combined with the youth of those taking part in it, and not only your youth today, but those who came before you over the centuries, who no longer are not only not young, but aren't here. So I wanted to honor that and to speak to that in the poems that I chose, because even considering the length of this ceremony and how many of these have taken place, I'm relatively young. Longfellow couldn't be here again today, I guess, so you've got me. So, but surely Longfellow is here, right? As are all those who graduated and took part in this before you, or I like to think they are, and I thought that I'd choose some poems that spoke to that or honored them, kind of fed their ghosts since they must be here. So this first poem I'm going to read is called View from Glass Door. Oh, and it comes with a bit of practical advice from a mom. So when you load the dishwasher, which I hope you'll do as soon as possible, always put the sharp knives upside down in the silverware basket, because otherwise what happened to me will happen to you. View from Glass Door. I've stood here before. Just this morning, I reached into the dark of the dishwasher and stabbed my hand with a kitchen knife. Bright splash of blood on the kitchen floor, astonishing red, all that brightness inside me. My son, the Boy Scout, ran to get the first aid kit, while beyond the glass door, the orchard, beyond the orchard, the garden bed, and beyond the garden, all the simple people I remember simply standing in their lines or sitting in their chairs, waiting for the film to start or for the plane to land, or for the physician to call them in. How easy it would have been instead to stand up shouting about cold, dumb death. But there they waited, as if the credits might begin to roll again, as if the bandages, the bolts, the scrolls, the paper towels, the toilet paper, and as the family stood around, considering my hand, I could clearly hear the great silenced choirs of them singing soothing songs, who fended for and fed me, who lay beside me in the dark and stroked my head, who called me their sweetheart, their miracle child, who taught me to love by loving me, who, by dying, taught me to die, covered in earth, on the other side of this glass door, calm, memorized faces to the sky. And this is called The Inner Workings. And just a quick note on this. For a while, I lived in a house that was sort of sunken down into some sort of pit. I think the house had just gradually got absorbed by the mud it was built on or something. So the house next to us was sort of high. So when I drive my car in the driveway, I could see directly into the basement of the neighbor who didn't have any curtains in his basement and spent all his time down there. I never met this man because he was in his basement all the time. And he had a laboratory or something down there. I mean, he had some serious thing going on down there, and I could never figure out what it was. And it's not that I stood peering into the window all the time, but I lingered there occasionally and never figured out what he was doing. But I sometimes suspected, you know, that, well, maybe he was an alchemist, or maybe he was, you know, maybe he was the creator. Maybe everything was sort of more. But anyway, I had some fantasies about that I won't go into. And then I moved. But this is about that. It's called The Inner Workings. This afternoon, my son tore his shorts climbing a barbed wire fence. Holy Toledo, I said, when he crashed back through the corn stalks with half of his shorts gone. The sun was ringing its sonorous silent bell underground as someone's grandmother tucked an awful little cactus under a doily embroidered with buttercups. In prisons, exhausted prisoners napped, having brief and peaceful dreams, while beautiful girls in bikinis tossed fitfully in their own shadows on a beach. And somewhere else, in some man's secret garden shed, the watchmaker, the lens maker, the radio maker, the maker of telescopes, of rhetorical devices, the time maker, the eye maker, the voice maker, the maker of stars, of space, of comic surprises, bent together over the future, clumsily tinkering with the inner workings of its delights. This is called To Try. It's for my mother. Like a bird in no hurry, flying to fly, not to fly somewhere, may I. And the brain, a gate, not open or closed, just all these Jupiters, these saints, their moons, their fates, their comings and goings, the moderns, the ancients, the ambitious, life behind with those left who lie, as I have, on the couch in front of the TV in the basement on a sunny day, neither happy nor in pain, until my mother called to me from the brightness between the pantry and the landing, "Get up here, for God's sake, and do something useful with your day." And my own, "Oh, my God." And then that long mountain slouching up the stairs to do something, to go somewhere. Then there I was, eventually, and there I will be one day always, despite my signal shoved by its own hurricane into the sea, and my ship, which has to go anyway, and is on its way, I swear, almost there. This ship my mother named the Complaint. May we call her instead the Okay, Okay. The Sweet By and By. I don't know if I'm the only one or not, but looking at photographs from the past, for so long, and trying to imagine the people who were in the photographs, it becomes impossible for me to imagine them living in a world with color like I live in. Seeing my grandmother standing in front of a rose bush, I just have to imagine she was always wearing gray, and the roses behind her were gray, and the sky was gray, and everything else was black and white. And I know it wasn't true. I know that they were all, nobody was colorblind, but the photography says other. So I'm sure there will be ways that people envision us in the future from our photographs and our traditions of them, and their grim smiles and that sort of thing. They'll think, wow, in 2015, those people, all they did was wear T-shirts and drink beer and laugh loud, no wonder they didn't have time to do important things. So until this class. So anyway, so this is about, projecting onto the images of the past. There's a place at the center of the earth where the dim rooms of our ancestors flicker. Their birds are there and their crickets. The warm sand beneath their feet, a picnic, a whale washed up on the beach, breathing in all the air around it, becoming solidity and dreamless sleep. But they had dumb jokes and personal identity, half-baked ideas. I've seen their magazines. They too sought pharmaceutical peace, longed for sexual release. It was not black and white, that world, despite the photographs, the amputation saws. There were individual moments. The discovery of good luck, the invention of anxiety. But even I who bring you the news cannot begin to believe it. The lost details of their lives are also lost to me. A white sack filled with black feathers, a hole at the bottom of the sack. Those black feathers drifting into an abyss of similar feathers, never, never to come back. And I'll end with this poem. My son makes a gesture my mother used to make. My son makes a gesture my mother used to make, the sun in their eyes, fluttering their fingers as if to disperse it, the sun like so many feverish bees. I keep driving, one eye on the road and one on the child in the rearview mirror, a man on the radio praying, the awful kid down the block where I was a child who buried a toad in a jar in a sandbox, dug it up a month later, and it was still alive. He does it again, the sun like the drifting ashes of a distant past, the petals of some exploded yellow roses. The miracle of it, the double helix of it, the water running uphill of it, such pharmacy in a world which failed her. She died before he was even alive, and here she is again, shining in his eyes. Light nodding to light, time waving hello to time, the 99 names of Allah, the sun extravagantly bright and full of radiant, preposterous, spiritual advice, like a Bible rescued from a fire that killed a family of five. I squint into it and see both a glorious parade of extinct and mythological beasts and an illustration in a textbook of a protective sheath of protein wrapped around a strand of DNA, all cartoon spirals and billiard balls, and the sole hope of our biology teacher, Mr. Barcheski, who, finally, enraged by the blank expressions on our faces, slammed it shut and walked away. Thank you very much, and congratulations.